Welcome to Living Queer, where we explore what it means to be queer in today's world. I'm your host, Erwin De Leon, and today we're joined by celebrity fashion stylist, writer, and speaker, Andrew Gelwicks. Andrew, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm excited.
All right. Let's start with your origin story. For listeners who might not know you yet, can you share a bit about how you went from growing up in Ohio to working as a fashion stylist here in New York City and writing the book, The Queer Advantage, Conversations with LGBTQ plus Leaders on the Power of Identity?
Yeah, of course. So I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And even from a very young age, I was always interested in fashion, in Hollywood. I would always steal my mom's Vanity Fair magazines. You know, it really has, for whatever reason, has always been a deep interest, a fascination of mine. That being said, I always knew, even from the beginning, that that was not quote unquote normal interest for a boy. And, you know, that it wasn't for, you know, it was because of my peers. My parents were really so supportive of my interests and things like that. And, you know, dressing up in my sister's clothes, and they were very supportive and, you know, thought that was very fun and whatever. That being said, it was always, we do that in the house. And I never really thought about it that much then, but I also knew, and I do know now, that was a protective measure. Not that they were ashamed or anything, but they knew that that would be catnip for the other kids. But regardless, you know, I was still always teased for having a girl voice and, you know, always having girlfriends. And a lot of my core group of guy friends were great, but I always felt like the black sheep of the group. And, you know, they were always interested in sports and everything, and I was not. It really, you know, manifested into just deep depression. Starting in middle school up until high school, when junior year of high school, I went to a treatment facility, in a residential treatment facility in Salt Lake City, that my parents sent me to. And, you know, to be clear, it was a therapeutic center. It was not conversion or anything along those lines. It really was a, you know, crisis prevention. It was interesting because it was all teenage boys there. And they were all, or we were all, struggling with our own things. Some were there for, you know, depression as well. Some were there for anxiety, drugs, family issues. But it was interesting how it seemed that at the core, almost all of the guys were also struggling with their sexual orientation. And in a way, it may not have been like the reason why they were there, but it seemed that this was a theme throughout everyone. But nonetheless, while I was there, it was, I learned to accept being gay, to accept my gayness, which I think at that time at least was huge and extremely important. And frankly, I really didn't think there was much to do besides that. Until, you know, I fast forward, I go to college, I do internships in New York, I fall in love with the city, I move here, I, you know, really am entering my kind of dream career, working at magazines and fashion. And it, you know, kind of occurs to me as I'm trying to think about how I got here, that I think a lot of it really kind of stemmed from growing up queer and the way that affected me. And to be clear, it's not, you know, and I, to be clear, it wasn't that because I'm gay, I was able to do these things, but because of the experiences of growing up gay, you know, having to feel like I have to prove myself and think, like, these different little factors that I think a lot of people who grow up, quote unquote, other, no matter, regardless of what part of that their identity that is, feels like they have to really prove themselves in, you know, to others, to themselves. And I just started to think, do other people feel this way? If I do, I'm sure other people must, specifically some of the most successful leaders in the world. So that's really kind of like how the book started, and that I really just wanted to ask these questions and kind of figure out if there was a clear advantage. And through all these conversations, it really kind of unfolded itself throughout the writing process that there is. And, you know, that's what I was able to compile.
But did you already think of it as an advantage or just, you know, because did you already have that idea that it's an advantage or just seeing like what queerness might bring?
It was a little bit of both. So I think at the onset, I had kind of had the idea that, or the thought that there could be this advantage, or that I at least had felt like there had been an advantage.
Okay.
Even through all the hardships, like it really felt like it made me helped me become the person I am today. And but at the same time, I also felt like it may be unfair almost to like assume other people would have would feel the same way. But then I also really started to think about how there's so many, almost exclusively, the stories we hear about queer people are negative or about the hardships.
Yes.
And I've always thought those are really important. They've helped me a lot. But at the same time, it's not the only story. And if you do have those hardships, you know, how do those help you? How do they how do they work to your advantage?
Right.
How do they, you know, turn struggle into strength?
Yes.
And I found that thought very empowering because I can still remember 12-year-old Andrew and thinking how much he would have appreciated hearing people talk about it this way, because I think it just, if you're able to have that mindset, it really is helpful.
Yeah, it was interesting when I was reading the preface of your book, everything resonated. Same thing, same story, high voice, popular with the girls, and all that. But like you too, and talking to my other friends, in spite of all the troubles or whatever challenge we had, at some level, I did know that it was helpful. It was an advantage, as you put it. And it seems like that's what you heard from the folks you interviewed.
Yeah, and I think it's also just a matter about timing and how and when people recognize that. So I wasn't able to recognize that until my mid-20s. But like one of the people I interviewed, Richie Jackson, who is, you know, a top Broadway producer, writer, his book Gay Like Me is incredible. He talks about in the book how even from the youngest age, like middle, I think it was in elementary school, and he realized he was gay. He even then thought it was the best thing ever.
Wow.
So, and I remember reading that and talking to him and being shocked and confused on how he could have thought that. But he just intrinsically, and he said it never even occurred to him that it's a bad thing, which I thought was the most amazing thing ever. So I think it's just a matter of timing. And, you know, a lot of people in the book didn't recognize their advantages until they were in their 50s or 60s. So it's different for each person.
So the queer advantage then would be a number of things that comes from knowledge, right? And acceptance. So would you say that would be resilience, creativity?
Resilience, creativity. I definitely feel like those are two that I feel really passionate, that I feel really strongly about for myself and that resonate. Becoming a stronger leader, having more empathy.
Right.
Each person I spoke with, they had their own sort of interpretation of what the queer advantage is. And I think that was also what was so exciting about it. And I think there were obviously some overlaps. I think resilience was a huge one, but each person kind of had their own interpretation. At the beginning, I think some people had speculation over, oh, just because you're gay, you're advantaged. And it's not you're born gay and you're automatically advantaged.
Right.
It's the experiences that, you know, help shape
Yeah.
And give you that foundation to harness your advantages.
Right.
You have to take them and utilize them there, you know, right. Also.
Yeah. And I think part of that too is us having to constantly prove ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, well, maybe it's a generalization, but most of us do work hard.
To prove ourselves to others, but also to ourselves.
Yes.
I think absolutely. I think yeah. even to ourselves is can be even more sometimes, frankly. Yeah.
That is true. That is true. So how have you harnessed this advantage, or however you see this advantage in yourself? How have you harnessed it?
I mean, I think certainly the resilience factor. I think even just like in leaving high school and going across the country to be at a treatment center and living with a bunch of teenage boys and spending 24 hours a day for months, you know, working on yourself to, you know, really feeling like the resilience in terms of sticking with something or feel like I needed to do really well in school because I had to prove something to others and myself. I feel like there's times where, you know, I find that I automatically am willing or instinctually just going to work a lot harder than I think other people who have not had that maybe same experiences. Sure. And I feel weird saying that, but it's almost like it doesn't even occur to them. But it's like we were trained from recess in middle school to do these things. And even like recess, for example, like you had to assimilate to survive.
Yeah.
That is a huge advantage in my business now.
Yes.
Because I'm constantly around very difficult personalities that can switch on a dime. And there's many different personalities all in one room. And having to easily befriend every single person and, you know, have like empathy towards people. And if I'm with a client and, you know, they're trying on clothes in front of me, that's extremely vulnerable.
Sure.
How can I empathize with them and make them feel comfortable and kind of read their body language to see like, oh, they're really not comfortable. They're not feeling this or whatever. Like, that's how we survived growing up, and that's been trained in us.
Yeah.
So I think it's all these little things that never even occurred to me were because I grew up gay, and it really just kind of struck me all at once that these were the things.
No, it makes sense, because when I do reflect how, a disadvantage or being at a disadvantage, one can't help but be empathetic with others who are at a disadvantage, right? So, how is it for you now as a gay man in the current social political climate that we're in?
You know, I think it's a weird paradox for me because I didn't really find my gay social life, my gay identity, gay friends until, you know, the past 3 or 4 years. So that was very late for me. That's subsequently happening at the same time everything is going on politically and, you know, around the world. And so it's this weird balance of being really kind of scared and concerned, but also maybe even more so feeling really excited about having found a queer community and a gay community and other gay men who get the same jokes that I do and, you know, like the same things I do, and I feel comfortable and we can talk about whatever. And I never had that before, because even like with my girlfriends, you know, love them, and we, you know, gay men and girls have always had a great relationship.
But
at the same time, they have very different experiences. Just like I can't relate to what they go through as a woman, they can't understand necessarily, even if they're supportive, they can't understand necessarily what I'm going through as a gay man. And so to have that has been really rewarding. But it's interesting that these are happening simultaneously when there's so much discord around, you know, trans people, identities, you know, it's just horrible rhetoric being thrown around. So you know, part of me feels scared, but another part of me, because I've now found this community, feels maybe also like invigorated in the sense that I see how strong all these people are and brilliant these people are. And that to me feels very comforting.
Sure.
So, but it's weird to kind of have them happening at the same time.
I can imagine. But also we have to admit we live in New York City. So we're in this wonderful bubble.
That is such a good point to add that we do live in New York City. And I mean, when I go back to visit Ohio, it's not that I'm having outwardly negative experiences there right now, but at the same time, you know, you drive by and there's Trump flags everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that's not directed towards me,
sure,
but at the same time, it kind of feels like it is.
Yeah.
And so it is different. And New York, we are in a bubble, but I also feel like I will happily be in this bubble as long, you know, as I can right now.
So going back to the queer advantage, so how can we as queer people use this advantage, however we define it or we see it nowadays, amidst attempts to roll back our hard-fought gains for equal rights, like, now marriage equality as well?
I mean, I think in terms of what we can do now, I think it really requires people to think about what their strengths are. And, you know, like I'll use you as an example. You are an academic, you are a researcher. That is your, it may not be your queer strength, but it is your strength.
Yes.
And I'm sure some of your queer advantages have been your ability to really harness your passion and your discipline.
Right.
So if those things are your strengths, how can you utilize them to move things forward? You're doing them right now.
Right.
So I think it really just requires that introspection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, and that's why I enjoyed doing this book so much, because we're all moving at lightning speed every day. And it wasn't until I was having conversations with these people that they had even recognized these things or uttered these sentences. And I could even see in their eyes a light bulb going off, which was really exciting to me. And you could also see like them being like, oh, wow, like that's kind of amazing. But it requires people to like really think like, what do I have to add? I think that's where I would say.
And you started writing this during the first Trump administration, correct?
Yeah.
So do you think some of your interviewers, it was in that backdrop or in that context that, you know, they were starting to think about this or respond to your questions?
Yeah, and I think it was about mid to end way towards Trump's first administration. But I think, you know, one thing about queer people, or I think the queer people I have met and, you know, see are, we are so freaking resilient, namely because we've had to be, had to have been. But I think, you know, and you see it now, like the more people press on us, the more we're going to dig in our heels and do whatever we need to do to make sure that we're okay and that we're better than okay. So I think, you know, it almost gave people maybe even that little extra fire, maybe even me as well, that just subconsciously, because I always, especially because of the way I grew up, I have a very strong visceral reaction to bullies. And I don't do well with bullies. So I think if I hear of bullies or feel like I am being bullied, I immediately, my de facto is, how can I be strong or push back, whatever? And I think this may have also been like my individual, very minor way of, you know, not letting myself be or us be pushed down.
Yeah, I think definitely a lot of us in the community, right, in the collective, it's like, no, we're going to fight.
Yeah.
I mean, well, we really have no option, do we?
No.
So how do you feel about the future of our community, the queer community?
I think I feel so excited for our community. I'm sure there are things ahead of us right now that none of us can even imagine are going to happen, frankly, which is terrifying. But that being said, I mean, I live in Hell's Kitchen, arguably like the gayest place on earth. And I'm always, and I work in fashion, like truly, like it's rare I'm with a straight person. But that being said, I see how strong we are. Mm. So despite, you know, if I'm on the treadmill in the morning and I see the news and, you know, X, Y, and Z are going across the screen and I'm like, you know, wanting to like close my eyes, you know, at the same time, I know that we have some of the most brilliant, strongest people that if I'm going to be choosing, like, if I want to find my team, like find my army, I'm glad I know I have a really good team. In that way, I feel very hopeful and encouraged. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, like if you're playing a video game, which I haven't played in a long time, I must admit, but you would always like choose your player.
Sure.
Like, choose your warrior. Like, right. I will always choose anybody who is other, queer, hands down, no matter what, those will always be the person I choose to be on my team and with me.
Well, our army's going to be fabulous.
We're going to be so fabulous, but we're also going to be so strong. And, you know, I think it's that aspect, that strength,
yes,
mental, emotional, physical for some of these Hell's Kitchen guys,
sure.
You know, that is empowering.
Absolutely. And I'd imagine in your world too, you see a lot of straight allies.
I see a lot of straight allies. And, you know, I think this is something that I need to work on is I always find myself surprised every time I'm with a straight man specifically who is an ally. And what's interesting about that is that they're not even doing anything outwardly ally-wise. They're just allowing me to exist, and it's not even a factor.
Right.
But that still startles me.
And that's what you said, right? It's so simple, and it doesn't have to be so hard that folks just need to allow us to exist.
Yes.
That's all we're asking
for.
Yes,
and I do a lot of public speaking at some like corporations, and I always get the question, like, what can allies do? Mm-hmm. And first of all, allies play a huge part in this.
Absolutely.
Because allies give us the support and foundation to harness our advantages.
Right.
But especially in like, really in any environment, like, it's really not that hard. No. It's called just supporting people. Allowing them to be themselves, but at the same time also making it clear to them that their opinion, their voice, their experiences are valuable and matter.
Right.
A lot of the people in the book that I spoke with, specifically a lot of the women, talk about some of the older male allies in like the business world and how empowering it was that those men made it clear that they didn't tolerate them being queer. They valued them as business people, as women, and as a queer person, and how those experiences give them a perspective to do what they're really good at.
Yeah.
I think it's even like us tolerating ourselves and our queerness.
Yeah.
Versus celebrating it and realizing that it gives us something to offer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's so easy for an ally to do because you're just allowing someone to exist and appreciate them for who they are.
Yeah, if only.
If only, yes.
So for those listening to our conversation, thank you. But especially young LGBTQ+ people, what would be your message?
I think to young queer people, and this is something that I'm still working on sometimes, and this may be a controversial statement, but to put yourself first. Mm-hmm. And I say that because growing up, every part of me was focused on making sure everybody else was okay. Because if I did that, then I would be well liked. I would be accepted. I wouldn't, I would, there'd be no target on my back. Mm-hmm. So everything was about every other person.
Yeah.
And that is exhausting.
Right.
That's crippling.
Yeah.
It's debilitating. And you're ultimately kind of doing yourself a disservice sometimes. And so, you know, I think even now, like sometimes I'm like, no, I want to do this and this is good for me. And it's, I don't need to, or I can't be so focused on how this is going to impact
A,
which is going to impact B, like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like we're queer people. We're always so focused on other people, even just like for our, and that can stem from even just like from our own safety.
Our survival.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, as an adult living in New York, sometimes I have to think about myself and what does Andrew want? What does Andrew need in this moment?
Yeah.
Because that is really important. And I think it's not saying to be selfish, but to really be conscious of what you are needing. And sometimes it does require you to say, I need to do this for myself.
Right.
And I think that's hard for a lot of queer people and people who just feel like they are on the outskirts.
Yeah, because we can't say no. Any opportunity for us to be welcomed, I'm doing air quotes here or what have you. Well, I'm glad you didn't feel forced to come here and talk to me.
No, but I think that's also something that like we, like even as adults, like we still have to work
on.
You know? And I'm sure to an extent, you know, heterosexual people have to do that too, but I think it's really hard for a lot of queer people.
Oh, sure. Well, listen, even at my age, I'm just now learning boundaries and when to say no and taking care of myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
You know, I think, you know, what's so great about this podcast and what, you know, the group is doing is that it is another way for people to find inspiration, community. I find that if I don't find myself inspired, whether it's creatively or, you know, politically or whatever it is, if I don't find myself inspired, like it really can take a toll. So I think whatever it, like people can do, and the more resources there are for people to feel, you know, empowered about their identity, their community. And, you know, when you are on the treadmill those mornings and you're just like, I want to go back to bed, the news on that TV, like I can't. I, you know, to know that you can, there are other people who are with you.
Yes. And there are podcasts like this.
And you can turn on the podcast and listen to us, replay it a few times.
There you go.
But I think that's, you know, I think that's really important.
Well, Andrew, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And for the work you do in fashion, in writing, in speaking, and in living out loud. For listeners, you can find Andrew's work and book, The Queer Advantage, Conversations with LGBTQ plus Leaders and the Power of Identity at andrewgelwicks.com and at your favorite online or brick and mortar bookstore. Until next time, I'm Erwin De Leon and this is Living Queer, Be Strong and True, and always choose light and joy. Thank you.